So I knew sooner or later, if I was doing this podcast, I would have to talk to someone from Oklahoma. And that's my little introductory pun to this week's You Should Run podcast, with a person who has a great story and a very easy to pronounce name, which is great for me when talking. Today I'm going to be, my name is Tony Heil, councilman from Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, and this is the You Should Run podcast, which you can find on Podbean and iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, and anywhere the best podcasts are, which is why this is there, hopefully. And if you've listened before, you know that we're talking with people who have run for office or are running for office about their experiences, why they've run, and hopefully why you, the listener, should consider running for office too. I'm very excited today to talk with James Cooper from Oklahoma, and we're going to talk about his experiences and hopefully get some motivation and enthusiasm as a result of this conversation. So, James, thank you for taking time today to talk with me.
Thanks for having me here to chat with you.
Well, great. So we are delayed by a few minutes because you, the Oklahoma City person, were just doing your job. So before we do anything else, tell me a little bit about, you know, who you are and what got you interested, not in running for office, but, like, have you always been politically minded?
Well, you know, my background is I went to school for film studies, but what got me going to school in undergrad and grad school studying film was, A, a love for storytelling. I grew up watching movies, you know, horror movies, even since I was, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old. But then when I was a junior, Columbine happened, and I remember watching a lot of the news stories about Columbine, and the discussions focused largely on blaming Mortal Kombat and Marilyn Manson and Tupac and Biggie, gangster rap, punk rock, and none of that really made sense to me because I had grown up listening to and watching and reading a lot of the things that really, quite frankly, politicians on both sides of the argument were making. And so I spent, no joke, you know, I'm 37 now, I spent my adult life, 18 to 36, now 37, studying the representation of media violence and wanting to know, like, well, what does cause, you know, mass shootings and domestic violence and stuff like this? What is at the root of violence? And spoiler, it wasn't Mortal Kombat. It was broken people, broken homes, broken families, and broken neighborhoods. And while my childhood dream might have been to write stories and make a movie, it ended up getting me to a place after all that research of saying, I think I need to run for city council and see about tending to precisely those problems and stop putting band-aids on dams.
Wow, that's incredible. If you get a chance to, there's this other great podcast I love called You're Wrong About, and they did a hour-long podcast about Columbine, and it was very much about these issues, and they had an expert on. And I think that there are a lot of, we have some preconceived notions when some tragic event happens, and it's hard to extricate ourselves from that.
Yeah, you know, it just literally became the narrative after a while that, you know, these were the places to place the blame. And right now, what I'm enjoying in our city, in Oklahoma City, is people are much more open to conversations about, well, what are we doing to have access to mental health care for our K-12 students? What are we doing to make sure that students are growing up in better environments with sidewalks and bike lanes and street lamps and parks with recreation for after school activities and for weekend activities and during those breaks throughout the school year? Like, our city seems really open to that, and I know it mostly because, A, the research I've been doing all those years, but then B, I had the honor of knocking around 4,000 doors during the campaign and talking to about 2,000 people, and I'd always ask them, what are your concerns for your neighborhood, hopes for our city? I'd stop talking and listen to them, and they would always tell me, better streets, we need sidewalks, we need everything I just listed off, they would say, and I would take notes on it, and now I'm just using those notes to, you know, tend to creating a more livable city.
Well, it's interesting how you tie that all in together. So you saw a problem, and then eventually you found this new kind of tool to do something. But tell me a little bit about Oklahoma City. I have never been to Oklahoma City. I don't know. The only thing I know about Oklahoma is that professional wrestling commentator Jim Ross is from there, and it's above Texas. So give me a little bit of a background about your city.
So, you know, really the way to think about it, the ward where I represent, Ward 2, is about 2 miles from the North Canadian River, which the part that runs along downtown here in Oklahoma City. We actually just call it the Oklahoma River. But that's where our city began, was at the river. The railroad lines and the river is what brought in commerce. Our city began, we're a very young city. 1889 is the year of the land run, and then by about 1892, we're incorporated. And it makes sense that we're a young city, and I believe have one of the youngest mayors in all of the country, in the city our size, and we're a capital city at that. And, you know, we have 8 city council people, 8 wards, and a mayor, and we are 5, the majority of us, 5 are 40 and under. So we're a young city, we have young representation, and where I represent Ward 2 is the first shopping commercial district developed outside of downtown. It was developed, we're coming up on the 100-year anniversary, 1929. It's called the Paseo. It's an arts district. Originally, it was called Spanish Village. If any of your listeners came to the Paseo, the entrance into Ward 2, like I said, 2 miles from where the city began at the river, they'd be shocked. They would see Spanish architecture, different vibrant colors, an actual winding street along where I live, art galleries. Right now, there's literally the Paseo Arts Festival happening this weekend. My campaign manager and I, / one of my best friends, we just left a coffee shop where I met with one of the former Ward 2 council people in the middle of a vibrant arts festival that's happening right now. So, you know, I think if people haven't had the chance to come to Oklahoma City, and they do, they should drive around and walk around Ward 2. It's just not what I think a lot of people would expect. And Paseo specifically, when it was designed, was created as a very livable neighborhood. If you were going to convince people to come out here 2 miles from downtown where the river is, back in the 1920s and 30s, well, most people couldn't afford a car. Most people moved by foot. Most people had a bike. And so to convince people to come out here, we had these 2 developers create a streetcar line that would guarantee, we can move you back and forth from out here back to downtown where you work. And when you walk out your front door, you'll have sidewalks and crosswalks guiding you to a new version of the downtown, right? Shopping, cleaners, grocery stores. Here are some schools. Here are some parks. And that was how the Paseo began, and that's how we developed most of our inner city neighborhoods once upon a time. And then unfortunately, in the late 1940s, after World War II, we tore up all that connectivity. We stopped requiring the building of sidewalks. We tore up our streetcar tracks that connected the entire inner city, that connected housing to shopping and employment. And there was this belief that everyone was going to be middle class and everyone was going to be able to drive a car. Everyone could afford to maintain one. And our city stretched and stretched and stretched until now, next to L.A., we are one of the largest landmass cities. We have 621 square miles. And so I think when people elected me this year, and Councilwoman Jo Beth Hammond, who represents that downtown area, who is our 11th woman ever elected and the youngest at 28, works in mental health, what voters said was that they want their city reconnected. They want walkable, livable neighborhoods, and that's what they told us at the doors. And I think the good news is our past is going to give us that guide.
Well, I mean, what's really interesting going on your website, and if anyone's listening, you can go at jamesforokc.com, and you really highlight some beautiful pictures of just your ward. Obviously, the rest of Oklahoma City is great too, but it does look very inviting. And hopefully from listening to this, people will get a different perspective on Oklahoma in addition to you. So was Oklahoma City politics like this for a while? It couldn't have all been under 40 for the last, 40 years. Did something change?
Oh, we are living through a renaissance in so many ways. You know, we just elected Congresswoman Kendra Horn. She's I think the first Democrat to represent that seat, Congressional District 5, since the 1970s. I think the first woman to ever hold, third, I think, woman to hold that seat, regardless, historic.
And you're going to get her to do this podcast after that, right? You're going to tell her you should do this podcast, right?
Oh, I will happily invite Congresswoman Horn to meet with you all. She's amazing, and she won by going out there, talking to voters, listening to them, and they spoke about education and healthcare as their top two priorities. And she did that last year during her election at a time when, as you know, a lot of your listeners might know, Oklahoma teachers, public school teachers, we walked out last April. We walked out of our jobs. We walked to the state capitol. Literally, many of us walked. People, teachers and families and students walked from Tulsa, Oklahoma, about 100 miles away, to our state capitol here in Oklahoma City to demand funding for their students in their classrooms, increases in wages that teachers had not seen in years and years and years and years and years. We were literally one of the lowest paid when it came to teachers. We wanted wage increases for our staff, and we walked to our state capitol for 2 weeks and demanded those changes. And Kendra just, you know, worked to deliver on those promises. And then right around that time, not only did we elect her, but we elected a young woman who had been the local DJ in a call-in show here for years to our city council in our historically black neighborhoods and part of town, Councilwoman Nikki Nice. And she's also young, and people knew her and they trusted her, so they've been, you know, calling into her for years. And now she's on there with Councilwoman JoBeth Hammond and I. And yeah, I mean, this is really a sea change, and I think it's a sea change largely because people like Kendra, Nikki, JoBeth, and I went out there and we talked with people who live here, and we asked them what was on their minds. And that has not been the history of our city for kind of decades.
Has that not been the history of the Democratic Party in Oklahoma too? Because, you know, I remember I was not following Oklahoma politics much last year, but I know that one of the political reporters said, you know, Kendra Horn is one of those under the radar races in the country. Look at that. If she wins, it means they're going to flip the Congress. And people are like, well, that's kind of a stretch, but it seems like things might be happening in Oklahoma, and obviously in your area in particular, that the rest of the country just wouldn't expect. Is that right?
I think that's right. And, you know, I think the national politics actually, where we are right now, we're the antithesis of what's happening at the national level. Like, people here, I mean, think about this week and all the conversations at the national level about the inability of the president to be able to work with Congress to pass an infrastructure bill. Well, I'm here to tell you that streets and schools were the number one and number two things on the people's minds here in Oklahoma City. And not just in Ward 2, which is, yeah, a fairly center-left part of the city, but all across the city, people want better streets, they want sidewalks, they want bike lanes, they want investment in their infrastructure, and they want better public education. And the people who want that elected people like Congresswoman Horn and me and JoBeth and Nikki, and that's what's about to be so much more fun here is we're about to do, I don't know how familiar your voters are with Oklahoma City's MAPS program, where we take a one cent sales tax and we dedicate it to about 7, 8, 9, 10 projects, capital projects that improve the quality of life. Truly, that is the goal of it. How do you improve the quality of life for the people here in Oklahoma City? We did the first one back in 1993 when voters in a red state approved that 1 cent penny sales tax. We transformed our city with all kinds of stuff. You know, we have streetcars here now. We have senior wellness centers, a civic center we reinvested in, all kinds of stuff that we've done. We've done it 3 different times, a MAPS vote, over the last 25 years. And this December, people like Nikki Nice and JoBeth and I are going to get to work with Mayor David Holt, who one of those under 40 with us on the council, and then with people who've been experienced on the council to transform our city yet again. And I think this time, not just invest in streets and more public transportation and parks, but I think we're going to actually be able to take on one of the other major issues that we heard at the door, and that was homelessness. Now imagine what news we will be able to make if the voters of Oklahoma City continue the tradition of MAPS and invest in things like access to mental health care and homelessness care and investment in infrastructure, when at the national level we're really even struggling to be in the same room with one another.
I would rarely recommend the You're Wrong About podcast. I just did one about homelessness. It sounds like it's a one, sounds like a difficult topic to handle, but sometimes not if you have the right leadership that understands it. You know, listening to you, it sounds like to me going into this thinking, oh, he was probably shocked that they won, that this, and it sounds like you're not surprised by any of this.
Well, hang on. I would say probably two things to that. Like, yes and no. So, like, you mentioned when you looked up the photos of Ward 2 that we put up during the campaign, which is how we launched the campaign. I even had to be talked into including a photo of myself. I literally wanted it to just be photos of recognizable parts of Ward 2. Because I really believe that the people who live here that I see out in, for instance, not just Paseo Arts District, but we have the Uptown 23rd Street, which is this dividing line between Ward 2 and 6, Joe Best Ward. But you go there, you have local independent cinemas, you have bars and patios and all, not chains, and you have bike shops, and you have these sorts of things, and you go all across Ward 2, our Asian district, same story, and some of the best spa in literally the world outside of Vietnam. You have our Lake Hefner. You have the LGBT district in our ward, a district full of bars and clubs that we're right now in the middle of a street enhancement project about to get underway. When you look at photos of all those different parts of town, I just knew who those people were who live there, who hang out there, who might not even be the most politically minded people, though a lot of us in Ward 2 are, just people who are kind of have this live and let live mentality and just want a good IPA or good whiskey or, you know, whatever it might be. Medical marijuana, which we passed. Like, I knew who those people were, and I just had faith in them. But the hard part, number two, was we had a 5-person race over here, and I was the youngest. I'm a person of color. I'm the first openly LGBT council person on city council. Like, the fact that we won without going into a runoff, that was really, I believe, but yeah, it's a bit shocking to elect in Oklahoma City the first LGBT council person and a person of color be the first one at that. And, you know, 37 and a public school teacher. We haven't had a public school teacher on there in 50 years. So, yeah, it was a bit shocking. And we had to work really hard for it. So knocking those doors to anyone who's out there, that's how you do it. Go out there and listen to people. Ask them what their concerns are, what their hopes are. Do both. And I think you might be able to pull off some shocks yourself.
Well, it sounds like you went into one of my other topics, which was some of the challenges of running, and you have this challenge of, you know, multi-person primary or election, and sticking out that way. You know, and you, like you said, you are a person of color, LGBT, in Oklahoma City. Was that daunting to you? Did you feel like, whoa, this is going to be a lot, or did you feel, yeah, it's a lot, but I got to do it?
Yeah, it was the latter. It's like, yeah, it's a lot, but I got to do it. You know, there were times where I was teaching during the day. I had a 9-to-4 teaching schedule, and I teach on the very south side of our city, of our inner city at least. And my ward, you know, it's about a 20-minute drive or 30-minute bus ride back over here. And I would knock those doors from about 4:30 right till sunset, you know, 6 p.m. in the winter, 9 in the fall and summer. And when I wasn't knocking doors, I had such anxiety because I was like, I need to be out there talking to people. If I can just get in front of them, whatever fears they might have that have been placed in their head about an LGBT person or a person of color or a young person, I can assuage because I'm a real person. And again, I just have faith. I had faith that the people who call Ward 2 home are just better than the caricatures that, you know, people will place on Oklahoma. I just knew that. I just felt it when we talk with one another that those prejudices, even if they are there, just kind of fall away. I thought the work needed doing. Like, I knew that there had to be better access to mental health and better neighborhoods with those sidewalks. We stopped, like I said, building sidewalks in the 1950s, literally stopped building them on this belief that everyone would be middle class, everyone would have a car, everyone could afford to maintain one. Our city government really got disconnected from the 50s, I would say, until really the last 25 years with its residents. And really, even the first maps wasn't as much public engagement as Maps 3 was in 2009. And this one, the city has polled over 50 different ideas that residents submitted that they would want as part of MAPS projects. And now whatever those 8 or 9 are that we do are going to be from the mouths of the citizens. And I think it was really incumbent upon me to go out there during that election and ask people not just what their concerns were. It's easy to just, like, rant and rave at things, but then you had to ask, I had to ask at least, what are your hopes? Because then that was the vision, right? Like, I knew from the hopes I would be able to figure out, okay, well, what kind of things can we do with the maps, which is, you know, Tony, that's going to be like an almost $1 billion public investment in our city. Almost $1 billion. That's insane.
Is that really daunting, like, to you? Because you're under 40 like me, and you're a public school teacher, and like you said, like, a public school teacher, and especially in Oklahoma, is not like living large. So you're talking about going from that to, oh, I'm going to look into $1 billion in investment. That's a lot on your shoulders.
It is. It is a lot. You're totally right. Yeah. And thank God I was a public school teacher, because, you know, I teach college prep and writing, creative writing, you know, and at the college level, English as well. And so much of my life has been teaching people how to write argument essays and researched essays with sources. And yeah, again, that's why I go back to the people. Like, I did my research, I talked to the people, and then I love to read and listen to podcasts about these sorts of issues. And so I feel fairly comfortable that working with people like Joe Beth, who comes from a mental health background, and Nikki, who, like I said, has served years listening to the people who call Ward 7 home, like I said, the traditionally black part of town. Like, I feel really confident. And then working with Mayor Holt, who served as chief of staff for mayors, who worked in the Bush White House, who was a law school grad. Like, I feel pretty confident that we're going to be able to put something together that, you know, honors the fact that that is $1 billion. So where do we responsibly spend that money in a state that, you know, tends to be, even though we as a city and as Oklahoma County might be blue, and Congressional District 5, which includes Oklahoma County, might be blue, we still live in a Republican conservative state. And I think in that way, it gives us an opportunity to say, okay, we're going to make this public investment, but we are going to be responsible stewards of where we spend that money. On what? What is going to give us the largest return on investment? And that's why mental health access and youth centers matter, because we know we're going to get a good return on investment in making those investments in our people.
You know, one of the things you said that really touched my ear, because I've gone door knocking many times, and I always ask people, you know, what are the top issues you have? But I don't. And I say what you said all the time, which is, what are your hopes? And I think that is really a way for progressives, especially, to kind of flip the script and not just think of campaign to campaign, but get the voters themselves to think of the long-term vision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I think that's it. And it took me being out there, because, you know, I literally have anxiety. That is something I have. and, you know, as someone who grew up LGBT in Oklahoma, in a rural suburb at that, I have anxiety. I was bullied as a kid, you know, for sure, for being LGBT, for liking writing and movies just a little too much, you know. it made it very scary to go out there and knock doors of strangers and not know how they're going to react to you, even though I had that kind of gamble that I felt like I knew a lot of these people. But when I found that if I asked them not just what they're concerned about, but what do you imagine, what do you envision, what are your dreams, what's your imagination, I found that kind of made it a lot less anxiety-inducing, and it became less of a, let's get our pitchforks and go after the people who work at City Hall, and more of a going, okay, well, whatever you all have in mind, how can we utilize the skill set that the people who work for all the different city departments utilize their skill set to address these needs? Let me give you one quick example. I serve on the city's public transportation board. I was appointed 4 years ago by a Republican mayor, Mayor Mitt Cornett, and you know, I thought I was going to go in there and just Bernie Sanders it up, you know, wag my finger, you guys are not spending your money in the proper places, like that sort of thing. And what I found was that the people who work in our public transportation department for Oklahoma City are some of the most knowledgeable, thoughtful. They attend national conferences for our industry. They know what best practices are. They know that frequency for buses should be 15 minutes before the next one arrives. They know we need covered bus shelters. They know we need those sidewalks to get you there. The problem is that our city government had not prioritized public transportation so long. So in a lot of ways, our public transportation department has just kind of been waiting for an advocate to come along. And I was that on our transit board when I got us Sunday bus service for the first time since 1964-65. But now when you have people like Joe Beth Hammond, who not just represents Ward 6 on the council, but doesn't own a car, bikes and walks and takes the public bus everywhere. You have Nikki, whose ward is where a lot of our public transportation riders are. And then you see the city's just invested in a new streetcar system for MAPS 3 that connects the inner core of downtown. You realize, like, that MBARC, our public transportation department, has just been waiting for, you know, a couple more voices to come along and say, this is what we need. Well, that's a hopeful vision, right? We're going to get our frequency down from 30 minutes to 15. We're going to have buses 7 days a week. You know, we're going to keep investing in walkability to connect you to those buses. We're going to have covered bus shelters, not just a pole in the grass, so that, you know, you have people with disabilities not waiting in grass, but, you know, with dignity under a shelter where they belong. That is a hopeful message. And it's one that says we care about people and their quality of life. And you get to move beyond, well, I'm a Republican and I'm a Democrat, and this is how we're satisfying my specific party's platform. No, you just speak to people's hopes. And hopefully 10 years from now, if we pass this MAPS, people will look back and their brains will feel a bit better, and they'll have a little bit of a load off their shoulder.
You know, the way you're talking, it reminds me of the kind of diversity we need in politics, because, you know, I was talking to someone who was a state representative here in Pennsylvania, and someone was saying that they got the best health care plan they ever got when they became a representative. They hadn't had health care before. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez talks about that too. And that most of the people in Congress or in the state legislature, they don't realize that people don't have health care. And that's like public transportation. Most people have a car, so they don't think about that need. And then you have someone like your other council member there. Well, they bring a diversity, not just in terms of gender or ethnicity or whatever, but the actual diversity of perspective to say, hey, here's this problem none of you get. And like, yeah, oh, I didn't see it. Thank you for bringing that to my attention.
Oh, you're exactly right. They're one of the things at the start of our budget conversations at the beginning of May, you know, we, in addition to $1 billion for MAP that we'll get to vote on this December, we're in the middle of budget talks, and that's $1.5 billion. Again, I'm a middle school teacher. I make barely $40,000 a year, and that was after a hard-fought $6,000 raise last year. Like, and you're going to tell me we have $1.5 billion to do anything? Okay, that's a game changer in my brain. But I asked I think it was finance, who was presenting about their budget. I asked them, I was like, well, where do we fit in the national conversation about the fact that barely half, less than half, have $400 to $500 in savings for an emergency? Where does Oklahoma City fit in that? Well, it turns out when you're a council person, you ask those questions, the very next council, we have an economist from Oklahoma City University coming and talking with us and saying, well, here's where we fit in. And he explained not just that, but how we're higher with our student loan debt here in Oklahoma City. Because we don't have good public transportation where it should be yet, that we have those improvements, most people own a car, which means they have a car loan, which means they have also maintenance costs. We're higher than the national average on that. You just see all these things. And then when he was done presenting, I just thanked him for his presentation, and I just turned to the rest of the council and was like, you know, so much has just been made about this sea change of this youth wave that's happening here on our city council, but, like, it wasn't rhetoric. Like, people elected us because they said, we want real people on city council who knows what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck and not have health care, not have access to mental health providers. We want those people there. And we're just adding our voices to the rest of the conversation.
Yeah, and people expect a government official to ask these questions, and people just don't sometimes. And that doesn't mean I'm bad people. They just didn't think to ask, and it takes maybe a different kind of person to throw that out there sometimes.
I think that's right. You have to, diversity is not identity politics. It's people being able to speak from their experiences in their city, in their neighborhood, in their state. And, you know, I live in the inner part of the city, and I experience the world way differently than someone who lives in a rural suburban part of this city. You know, I just do. And that doesn't make one experience better or worse than the other. It just means that when we add all of our experiences up, then we're able to talk about the totality of everyone's experiences in the city and how we experience it similarly but differently. And there's just nothing wrong with speaking to the need to have diverse people in the conversation. Well, I was talking to Aaron Wilder, my campaign manager, one of my best friends, about this last night. Like, World War One began, right, because the Austrian-Hungarian Empire did not have room for representation, they believed, in their governments. They weren't looking to people from the different parts of their empire to add their voices. And then when you don't do that, you're not listening to people's cultural concerns and their different religious beliefs. You're just not hearing from people, and well, we saw how that ended up.
Hey, I mean, that's kind of how the American Revolution happened, too. Taxation, yep, without representation. We got in touch because of the mutual connection with People for the American Way and maybe YEO. Tell me what groups helped you, whether it was running for office or that you've reached out to in general.
Yeah, well, first, thanks to them, because, you know, that was really helpful. You know, our teachers union, the AFT-OKC, they were proud to endorse us. Planned Parenthood, Great Plains. You know, we have a Planned Parenthood in Ward 2, and always my responsibility to make sure that, you know, people have access to affordable health care and can, you know, make decisions about their own bodies. So happy to have their support and to support them in return. You know, and then we had elected representatives across the metro area from state and county government who stepped in and said, you know, we get this vision. And yeah, it was kind of an all hands on deck, you know, kind of moment. It was really cool.
Well, good. So for people who think that politics is daunting, if you have a vision, you'll get people on your side, and it's a lot less daunting to do things with people than by yourself.
Oh, I mean, it just, no offense to my libertarian friends, but yeah, I honestly don't, like, I think someone has to have a real good sense of self, and that comes from being very critical of self at the same time, right? Like, being able to realize that I do not have all the answers, but if I research and I talk to other people, then I can get to some best practices, right, from the most voices, being able to get there. I think that's where it's got to start. It's like, you got to start by looking at yourself in the mirror and kind of go, well, who am I? Why am I here? What's my purpose? And then from there, be able to have vulnerability to realize that I don't know everything. A person can't know everything. A person cannot accomplish everything on their own. And then how do I ask for help? How do I know when to do that? And I think that's healthy.
I agree. Totally agree. Before we finish here, every time I talk to someone on this podcast, I want to know why they would encourage other people to run for office. So briefly, why would you tell other people? Should other people run for office too?
Oh, I think everyone should run. I think everyone should run for office, and I think everyone should work in the service industry. I think both of those things are completely true, right? It just teaches us empathy and that there are things bigger than ourselves, that we're a part of something bigger too. No, I would encourage everyone to...
Well, we can't have everyone run for office, James. If we had everyone run for office, then there would be anarchy. But the more the better, right?
I think the anarchists have other ideas, but...
But they should at least get involved in the political... We should get more people to run for office, and everyone should get involved.
They should. You know, I think one of the hardest things for me over the last 10 years, one of the most discouraging things for me, has been where people have lost all faith in our institutions. Like, when people forget that we... the people are the institutions. Like, literally, it's right there in the language. Like, we the people. And I think when people just get so discouraged and go, oh, the courts suck, or oh, Congress sucks, or oh, city council sucks, or, you know, like, no, it's the people who hold those positions that make or break the institutions. Like, our institutions are as fragile as we are, and they're as strong as we are, too. So I think once a person realizes that, like, all bets are off, and then it's like, well, if I don't get involved, why not? And who else? Like, why not me?
Perfect example. So if you're listening to this, why not you? Take James' example. And if you want to learn more, you can go to his website, which is James for OKC.com. Learn a little bit more about James and Ward 2. James, and how can people find you on social media, James? Because I imagine if you're under 40 and this involved, you have some social media there, too.
Yes, so thanks for that. People can find me on Instagram at James for OKC, and that 4 is spelled out F-O-R, so James for OKC. And then they can find me at that same handle on Facebook, James for OKC. And send your ideas. I'd love to hear more from other people's experiences right now in their cities and what they're doing to bring them back to life as well, because, you know, I love hearing best practices.
Great, and hopefully I can learn more from you and our little town of Bridgeport, and everyone can learn from Oklahoma City. Thanks, James, for inspiring people and for taking the leap to run for office.
Thank you, and I wanted to say again thank you to Ward 2, and also thank you, Tony, for the opportunity to speak with you today.